I always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, taking the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest ball strikers I'd ever seen.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the McKellar Golf Podcast, the PGA Championship edition of the McKellar Golf Podcast. My name is Lawrence Donegan and I am joined all the way from Valhalla Golf Club by my good friend and co-host, Mr. Jeff Shackelford. How are you doing, Shack?
I'm doing great, Lawrence. Lorieville's is fun and vibrant as I remember, maybe even more vibrant. I'm staying downtown this week and it was a great time here in 2014 and weather willing, I think it's going to be an even better week this year.
Yeah, I should probably say, because you're off base, your sound is a little bit janky this week, but it's fine. People will love the podcast, so it's well worth going. Certainly, I can understand what you're saying. of course I can. Anyway, here, Jeff, so you have spent the morning out on the golf course. I guess what people will want to know from you is, what do you think of it?
Well, it's in great shape. I was a little shocked at how soft it is. You know, we heard with the move to May and the new turf that we might get some fast and firm golf, and that's definitely not going to happen with how much water it took on last week, and we're expecting to get more rain on Tuesday. We're recording this Monday, and Tuesday's looking like a wet day, maybe Friday afternoon. So it's a big, long, still difficult test, and I guess the good news is that it's probably playing about the same as it has in August when it's generally been great. That one senior PGA, they just had so much water that Andy North was reminding me today how, I mean, he literally had to go buy a pair of shorts and he just wore rain pants every day over them, and it was just the multiple bridges were taken out. We're not expecting anything like that, but it's in a floodplain. And so, but that said, you know, they'll be able to hit a lot of drivers, which, as we saw with Rory at Quail Hollow, and we know that that's a great thing. You know, it's hard to explain it, but you just know at the tournament when people get to hit driver, it just changes the whole mojo of the players and the event. And it's not a knock at the USGA and US Open, but there's just something to it that the great drivers of the ball get excited and it's just better. It's just better for some reason. And so that's good. And crowds are great. Amphitheaters around a lot of greens. So it'll be high energy. And it could be the last one for Valhalla. We'll see.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, a number of factors. I mean, the PGA doesn't own a percentage of the course anymore. And they've added Frisco now, which they do own and have committed multiple PGAs to. But there are none on the books. I would be shocked if they don't come back here. I mean, everything has sold out. Great crowds. They get excited here, and it's a big. It's still a big city in a sense. And I think they'll be back. But right now, there's nothing on the schedule, and I think it works well with the May date. Obviously, we'll discuss that again next Monday or Tuesday to see how it all went.
I did see, so the forecast has changed then, because I did see a forecast the other day and it seemed to be a lot of lightning in the area, and so that's obviously changed. Clearly.
No, it just hasn't gotten better. Tuesday is not good, and Friday afternoon has some potential for trouble. Thursday should be great. We'll get the first round in, no problem. But Friday is where it starts to get a little dicey, and then the weekend is good. So, but it's very, you know, the Zoysia grass is tricky. It's like Kikuyu light, so it's always got a little spongy feel to it. I think where it'll be interesting is around the greens. You know, it used to be all bent grass, and you'd putt it. And we'll just see what guys do. I've tried to watch some people today, and it's hard to tell. I think it looks great to putt through and hit bump and runs through, but as you know, the modern player, I don't think like modern players. So they have different mentalities, and they'll huddle with their teams, of course, to map out the plan.
The and how's the rough? And with the fairways,
the rough is not bad right off the fairways. They definitely cut it today in anticipation, I think, of the weather. It said 4 inches on the sheet, but it's definitely lower than that. My sense is this is the last time they'll cut it for the week. And then outside of that, it's brutal. There's like a 6-inch height where the people are, and you really have to watch your step too out here. It's there's a lot of little animal holes, so that stuff's wicked. But the people will push most of that down. So, but you're going to see some moments, and you're definitely going to see some burrowing animal rulings, since we have players who pretty much are looking for a free drop and a chance to get their hand on the ball whenever they can. Which I think I'd love to hear what you thought, but it was interesting last week with Xander Schauffele how much people reacted quickly and negatively to his situation. And then we kind of saw the explanation and saw what was going on, and it wasn't as bad as it seemed. But isn't that a fascinating change in how, you know, more people are reacting to players pushing the boundaries of the rules or being perceived as pushing it? And I just think that's a fascinating change. You and I would have been the people going, what the hell's he doing? And now you see all these people jumping on it. And I think it tells you something about how people view the golfers these days.
Yeah, I think you're dead right about that. It was quite an outpouring straight away. Actually, before I forget, the thing about that is I listen to podcasts all the time. It's been talked to death, but the funniest thing for me was, so after all the furore, and he eventually talks the rules official into giving him a drop, and he gets out into the kind of clear land, whatever, and then you can just tell he's about to take this drop, and he's trying to drop in a spot where it'll bounce forward or something. So he can actually get his hands on it and place it. And it was so funny when he dropped it and it's wedged up against the tee. The disappointment. So it didn't bounce forward. The disappointment in his face. He couldn't believe it. And I swear to God, at that moment, I was rolling on the floor. And then the rules official, to his credit, because Xander was given I can't remember the guy's name, Donaldson or whatever, Derek or something. You know, Xander was kind of pleadingly looking at him, you know, did that move forward? And of course the guy said, that's in play, and that was it. I thought that was great. Very funny, because these guys, you know, they're now, I'm sure, well, of course, well, Nick Faldo kind of patented that thing about practicing your drops, but they're all dropping it now in a way that they make sure it doesn't land and stick. They drop it where it, you know, bounces in front of the, you know, bounces towards the flag or whatever.
Yeah.
It's, again, another more bullshit. Using the rules.
Is it? But I think it tells you the drop rule is broken, because we saw the most blatant example with Scottie Scheffler at Phoenix last year, where you could just tell the way he dropped it. The first two drops were with the goal of getting his hand on the ball. And it kind of makes you realize where they were with the old shoulder height drop was probably worked really well. They probably went a little too far with it. But I'm just more intrigued now at this point at how many more people are kind of assuming the worst with players. And that is, wow, talk about yet another problem for the PGA Tour. That one of the things you did was sell your sport as the last athletes within pure integrity and playing by the rules and blah, blah, blah. And all of the nonsense over the last few years has changed people's perception of them in ways, fairly or unfairly. What an issue for them to deal with. And I don't know how you right the ship, because players are running the show and they want what's best for their score, and they don't care about the big picture stuff.
I think Xander was, I remember the waste management last year. So there was kind of report. He was out hang on, let me phrase this properly, but, you know, he was getting sort of rulings, all, you know, good. Anyway, he's, again, can you criticize a guy? No, he just uses the rules and, you know, and takes advantage of them. But, you know, whether or not you kind of really want to do that is a different question, but it's really not a good look, and you're dead right. The outpouring of criticism was quite something to behold. It did look on its face, it looked preposterous. But good old Johnson Wagner rode to the rescue, explained everything. Well, I heard somebody saying, and that, you know, don't give him the draw, or don't give him the, you know, the TIO. Let him hit the shot, and if he hits the cable or the wire, then he gets to replay. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, I'm not saying anything that has been said a million times over the last couple of days, but that's what they do in when you hit electric cables or whatever. I never remember playing a caddy in a golf or European Tour event in Cannes, and the first time I ever seen it, the guy I was caddying for hit it off the pylon wires. I got a redo. Anyway, yeah, these guys are, their reputations are, it will come on to that, I guess, later on in the podcast. But another black mark against, maybe not entirely justified in this instance, but it's not good. As you say, another problem for the PGA Tour. Here, Jeff, you were out walking around this morning. Did you see anybody out there? Come on, you can tell the listeners, can't you?
Yeah, it was, very busy. You know, last year I was just writing up my newsletter. Last year, Monday in Rochester, and the people were wonderful there too. It's so great when these events go to markets that don't have a regular event. People are just happier to see everybody and excited. And last year, everybody was like, where are the golfers? I go, well, yeah, they only play 9 holes now. But with tomorrow's weather forecast being crappy, the place is packed out there today. It's like a public course in America. Everybody's out. Of course, first golfer I saw was Michael Block playing with Lucas Herbert. I can't say it was like the people felt at St. Andrews when they laid eyes on Bobby Jones for the first time in 8 years or 7 years. But it was, he's there. He's getting a lot of love from the fans.
Good.
And so, yeah, Tiger was out early and, I walked a few holes with him, and he looks great. I mean, it's the same old story. He's walking well. He's working hard as ever. He has his old notes out from previous PGAs. And, you know, all he did, Lawrence, was hit one-handed putts on every green with his note. I assume it's his old yardage book, which he's allowed to use in practice rounds. I don't ask me to explain what he can transfer to the yardage book, all that whole – anyway, I don't understand it, but yeah, he's reading his old notes from putts in the past, and he obviously has a nice track record here in 2000 of making putts. And yeah, he spent about 10 minutes after the round signing autographs. He's in good spirits, but it's a brutal climb for him. Pinehurst is his chance, I think, this year to, once he's in a little better shape, barring any other injuries. It's a flatter golf course. It's an iron second shot golf course. It's a short game course. That place is just going to be, I think, his best chance. It may be true, and we'll see. But this is a big place. It's a hard walk. The walks from greens to tees are even tough, especially because, of course, as usual, we have multiple tees that are way back and new ones that are back. And most of them are fine. One of them on the par 3 14th things. But it's just too long of a hole. So, a lot of guys out playing, a lot of good energy out there for a Monday, and nice to see. And other than, the rain, we're set up for a nice one.
I saw a couple of videos from Tiger. I'm surprised to hear you say he was walking well. He looked like, one of those robots, those Boston Dynamics. He looked like a V2 or a V3 version. He looked just like he was just, I didn't think he was moving particularly well, but you were there, you saw him.
I mean, he doesn't walk like he used to, but I'd say I look more for the limp, and I don't see a limp. Whereas I saw Hideki Matsuyama a little bit later, and he withdrew with a back injury last week, and he's not moving well. So
you're telling me that I shouldn't be putting my $5 on him.
That is correct. I also saw Charlie Hoffman getting coffee this morning. He also was rubbing his back. I mean, and who knows, but he didn't look like he was feeling great. And I know he's had back issues. And it really did. It reminded me that I don't think these players are prepared. There is, at some point, somebody's going to cover golf from a hardcore betting perspective. And they're going to start putting this kind of intel out there, and they're really not going to like it. Somebody could just scout the range, hang around the medical or the fitness trailers, talk to some caddies, pay for hot tips on whatever, they can do the most brutal coverage of golfers and who looks good going into a tournament from a gambling perspective. And these players are so unprepared for that kind of scrutiny. They would be so irritated by it. So that's the end of our gambling prognosticating discussion.
Well, you are right. That is a really, you know, if I'm 23, 24 years old and I'm into covering golf, that's a really, really good job spec, Jeff.
Until the tournaments go, we're not going to credential you because we don't like your style of coverage, which is exactly what would happen. But I mean, somebody could almost do it as a fan, really.
That's right.
Yeah,
you can go and buy. You can go and buy a ticket. Every week. Listen, before I set you up for your. We're not going to discuss your interaction with Tiger. Is that?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh well. Yeah, he was. I mean, we didn't have a long chat, but I was standing at the back of the 18th green with Andy North and talking about Valhalla and the turf, and just Tiger just walked right up to us and holding out his, you know, the most probably other than the Calamity Jane. Most important putter in the history of the game at us. And I'm like, I don't mind. I just look. And thankfully, Andy took it as a two-time U.S. Open champion. And he goes, how many players? He just blurts out. He goes, how many players in the field do you think are younger than this putter? And I went, ha, ha, ha. I don't know. And we started throwing out some names. And then his caddy, I mentioned, you know, the guy who just won in Myrtle Beach, he's 24. Add him to the list. Tom Kim, I think the Hogarth twins. So I'm actually going to try to, when the player guide comes out, do the math. But it is amazing. That's kind of old man talk, I guess, thinking about, you know, Ludvig Åberg is younger. Who's younger than – and then he said – and then also Tiger said, yeah, and who wasn't born yet when I won in 2000? And there might be a few of those. So I guess it's nice. It means he's kind of reflecting on things. And it was great. And then he spent about 10 minutes, almost 10 minutes, signing autographs, which was cool. He even posed for a few photos. He bent down. I was like, oh, don't tweet
don't
back
do that.
To pose for some stupid photo. That's just what we need.
I'm not going to lie, Jeff. When you were just talking about that, you were just saying probably the most famous golf, you know, one of the top two or three most famous golf clubs in the history of the game, you know, when you were talking about it. But the hairs on my arm were standing up.
Yeah,
you know, that is something else.
I asked him, like, because the grip looks old, and I go, "Is that that's not the original grip?" He goes, "Oh, no. I regrip it all the time."
Didn't he buy dozens and dozens and dozens?
He did.
It's an old pin grip, I think.
It's funny to see that grip as well on putters now with so many guys not using that kind of a grip. And then I did not, you know, I goofed. I should have looked in his bag because, you know, at the Masters he had an 8802 that he likes to practice with. And I'm curious if that was in the bag here as well, but I forgot to look. So great reporting work there. Not that I would waste the question on it tomorrow in the press session, but I do think it's funny that not funny, but interesting that he still loves to practice with some older clubs just for precision or feel purposes. He doesn't do it for show. And, of course, he also plays a ball that spins more, and he still plays his – I was talking with Rob McNamara about that because we were going into the par 3, the 14th, which is 250, and I said, you know, the problem – unfortunately, with these organizations, is they, and you saw yesterday some of the clubs that Rory was hitting at Quail Hollow. People seize on that, and the lofts are different. Well, Tiger and Adam Scott, and maybe a handful of others, still play the old lofts, but they seize on somebody hitting a 6-iron from 250, and they go, well, then it's not a big deal to have a par 3 play 250. Well. Yeah, but the green really just isn't designed for that long of a shot, and you just that kind of thing. But anyway, yeah, Tiger plays a ball that still spins. He still plays his original loss and lies, basically. Maybe a few adjustments to his changing physique, but otherwise, yeah. So I don't know about you, but and again, Rory was hitting in a mile, but it was shocking to see when he hit into some of those holes. And it's one guy playing a game totally different than the rest of the field, essentially.
So I guess we should talk about that. We'll talk about it in the context of players coming into the PGA Championship on hot form, I guess. Scotty Scheffler hasn't played for a couple of weeks. I don't know. Have they had the baby yet? My goodness,
I had this discussion with some people who I won't name because I don't want to get them in trouble, but it's really weird. And I did see Ted Scott, his caddy, and I met the young woman he's instructing who's played in the Augusta National Women's Amateur, and I was with some people who said something about the baby, and he goes, "Yeah, no, I won't say anything, privacy reasons, but yeah, I'm here." And I'm just, and after he left, we were like, not, and this isn't a knock on Ted Scott but when it's like, well, did something go wrong? The normal person just goes, well, is something wrong? Did something go wrong? Like what? It's weird. It's just weird. If you had a child, just announce it and leave it at that. I don't understand how this become a privacy thing that she, I mean, he's the one who first brought it up, and then he got annoyed that people wrote about it. Well, it's like, well, you brought it up and said you might leave the Masters if your wife has a child. Sorry, you have to understand that's news. And then as far as we know, it sounds like she did, and everything's great, and she's healthy, and the baby's good, and everything's, life's good. So I don't understand.
Yeah.
A simple confirmation, and he's playing, and he's on the press conference schedule, and then we can move on. It's a strange mentality that this is some sort of invasion of his privacy when he's one who first sort of mentioned it, and nobody is looking to take this information and do something bad with it. 99.9% of the population just wants to hear a nice bit of news that mom and baby are doing well, and the number one player in the world is going to play the PGA this week, and we can all move on.
That 23, 24-year-old enterprising new betting reporter is probably, he would be climbing the walls at some hospital. If he was really doing his job. I mean, anyway.
Yeah, it's weird.
I'm sure it's just a bit odd. Yeah, as you say, who cares? In the greater scheme of things, let's just hope it's all great and you'll show up. I raised him simply in the context of two weeks without, I have to assume he's been out hitting balls and doing some sort of work. I'm sure he has. I don't know his schedule well enough. I don't follow it closely enough to know if he ever takes 2 weeks off. And what he's like when he comes back. A breaks are sometimes good for golfers, aren't they, Jeff? He might just come back and play his great. Yeah, he might come back and play, be refreshed and inspired. That's certainly going to be the case. You know, wouldn't that be just such a wonderful gift, gift for his new child? So you have that kind of inspiration. You'll be well-rested. So we're not writing Scottie Scheffler off, are we? Obviously not.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It could even be a situation where he's relieved. Everything's good. This is exciting. This is a big change in my life, but it's exciting. And he looked really tired at the end of Harbortown. He was a saint to play that event. He could have easily blown that off and said, you know what? I got too much going on. I'm exhausted. Yeah. I just won the Masters. He could have passed on that, and he didn't. He had to come back on Monday. And I think it makes him even more dangerous. I guess everybody's just more excited because you have Brooks Koepka winning in his last start. You have Rory playing so well. So it feels like we're set up for some potential excitement. Of course, there's the usual tee time luck of the draw stuff and all that, and anything can change between here in Singapore or here in Charlotte, but it feels like we may have a few people here who are ready to give him a run for this unbelievable run he's been on, and I think we need that desperately.
Desperately. I don't want to leave Scheffler. Yeah, I was thinking about Scheffler and thinking, this golf course suits him. This is a guy who won at Augusta and then at Harbortown in successive weeks. So I think we can take from that it really doesn't matter what the golf course is or what it's like or what the conditions are like. He's just phenomenal, actually.
Well, yeah, when you think about where he was earlier in the year, hitting 16 greens every day and getting annoyed about his putting. And then really when you think about Harbortown and Augusta, and if you look at some of the numbers, I mean, I didn't memorize them, but I looked at them enough where actually the ball striking wasn't quite as great. And it just shows you but his chipping is so good when he misses greens. And I'll be curious how what he does around some of these greens. Like I said, it's this tightly bowed Zoysia. It's a little bit softer. And Zoysia, I didn't see a lot of guys experimenting with bump and run. So I think they're going to either putt out of it or hit a – it doesn't look appealing to me to try to hit a big flop shot. It looks so chunkable. You know, the Zoysia, it's just – I don't know. The ball, it sits on it nicely, but not as great as Kikuya, let's say. So I'm not saying this in some way is going to be his kryptonite this week. It's just going to be interesting to see what he does. And other guys too, because there's some, the greens here are not that big and there's some really cool little tilts to them and tilts to the property that make them play even smaller. And I think that was the one thing I forgot about the course. So it's a place that, You're gonna need to get up and down a few times, and but he's perfectly good at that. But so is Rory. I mean, he's really gotten unbelievable at that little flop shot that just takes one bounce and just stops. I mean, everybody thinks of the Ryder Cup one, but I saw he had a couple at Quail Hollow as well, as I was traveling and watching it and unpacking and stuff when I got here.
I just hope that that the best chippers are able to take advantage of their superior skills. Sounds like it that will be the case. They will have a chance to separate themselves in that particular aspect.
I think, like I said, it's kind of, I don't know how these guys think at this point, but I would look at putting from off a lot of these greens, and I know they don't like to do that. So we'll see. That'll be fun. I was a little shocked. I didn't feel like the greens were absurdly quick today, so we'll see. This PGA of America admirably does not share stint meter numbers, which I think is great. They don't want to encourage stint meter. Not that it matters at this point. No. That ship has sailed, but I still admire that Kerry Hague refuses to get into a stint meter race.
The are they still doing the rangefinder thing? Is that still?
Yeah.
What a waste of time that proved to be. Nobody uses them.
I mean, they do occasionally, but I think what's fun is how embarrassed they are when they use.
Well, the only instance you would want to use them if you're on a different fair, you know, if you smash one, you've hit it in an adjacent fairway, then it might help you then. But other than that, you never. Again.
Not these guys, no. And that's what I've brought up that argument with Kerry Hague, and I've gotten nowhere because Southern Hills was a great example of that last year. This course, Bethpage, and let's see, what else? I mean, quite a few of the courses they play, that is not an issue. But why would you, on a course with parallel fairways, want to reward somebody for hitting it down the other fairway? And then, of course, the other thing it can do at certain golf courses, Lawrence, is encourage somebody to play down a different fairway to take a shortcut and use their rangefinder. It's just dumb. It was a thing they claimed would grow the game, and of course it has not done that. And watch for this week. It's really fun when guys use it in this. They try to do it discreetly, and it's kind of like Jordan and Tiger were when they kind of went to green books for a while. They'd like do it very, you know, incognito and hide it between their legs and look like they kind of, the purest, the guys who have some soul, a golf soul and knowledge of the past, they were sort of ashamed. And it's still, I mean, I remember there was a spot last year where Morikawa, and it was like you know, Billy the Kid, the way he brought it out like a gun, you know, and he shot it and he was like, couldn't wait to put it away. He kind of felt ashamed. And again, good golfers do not use direct shots to the hole with the yardages. It's just absurd. Anyway,
that'll be something to watch out for. You, we spoke about McIlroy. Did you see much of Quail Hollow yesterday, Jeff? I sat down early and I was absolutely gripped. Yeah. I mean, I would have liked maybe another couple of guys in the mix, but it was it was two guys and they were going at it, and there was a kind of air, well, certainly in my mind there was an air of inevitability about it all. But my goodness, McIlroy in that kind of form is is just irresistible. He's so exciting to watch. His putting looked awesome. He's driving the ball. Actually, one thing I did notice, it reminded me, people will forget this, but maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, remember he went to Pete Cowan? He was going to switch. He'd switched fully, actually, for about 4 or 5 months, and he went to Pete Cowan, and Pete Cowan had him hitting fades. The Quail Hall was the first tournament he played after switching to Pete Cowan, and Pete Cowan had him hitting fades off the tee, trying to flight his wedges down a bit lower at the time, and that really, you know, because Rory was hitting a distinct draw at that period in his career, and anyway, here we are, Pete Cowan last, I don't know, 6 to 9 months, whatever, Rory ditches everything, and here we are, fast forward to this week, and Rory's hitting fades off the tee and flighting his out. Well, actually, that's not quite right. I mean, he did hit a couple of, simply because the pins were at the back of the greens, he hit some towering gap wedges. But generally, you can just see these follow through. He's not quite Tommy Fleetwood, obviously, but he is flighting his ball quite a lot more, which is great to see. I hate when he's got wedges in his hands and he's got this big, high, flowery follow through. It's never good. It was a couple of them yesterday, or one of them yesterday. I can't remember which hole, but it's never good for distance control. But he seems to have got the ball down a little bit lower. It's better for his distance control with the shorter clubs. He's hitting fades off the tees. So it's Pete Cowan without Pete Cowan. But there we go. Whatever way you get there, he looked really, really great. There's nothing, but it'd be interesting actually, Jeff, if that's about as good as it gets for a Sunday afternoon watching the PGA Tour. I just wonder what the viewership will be like. My goodness, if they can't get a decent audience for that, they're in serious trouble, aren't they?
Yeah, it would be a bad sign if that continued the 20% dip, but it's springtime and there was beautiful weather in a lot of parts of the country. And I'm increasingly of the belief that all these people out playing golf are out playing golf and not watching it. And it's ironic since these are the game growers, we've had to hear about them and they, you know, they use that shield of growing the game and maybe they, I mean, I'm really considering in the PGA press conference tomorrow, if there's one grow the game reference, just raising my hand and going, are we sure the game hasn't already grown enough and maybe it should shift to sustainability or something? But it was compelling. I watched Saturday more. As you know, I'm under doctor's orders. I'm limited in how much I can watch Quail Hollow, you know, because just for medicinal purposes, I need to make sure I limit my intake, especially because it has a PGA next year. And I felt flat on Saturday. I don't know, because there were people out there. There was stuff going on, and you have these two guys going at it. And then Sunday felt more energetic for sure, as it should have been. And of course, then Rory put the thing away at 15 when he hauled out the bunker shot. And Xander was already kind of falling apart. But I was more intrigued by how much he kind of collapsed under the weight of the Rory with his full mojo. And I think that was fascinating. I wonder if that will deliver any more humility from the Cantlay-Shoffley duo that is you know, a big part of the mentality of how they shape the future of the sport, those two and their bond and all that baloney. So anyway, but if you read the Q&A with Rory in my newsletter, he really is not wanting to be that player anymore that just flights and bombs it. He likes hitting different shots, and he might not even be thrilled that Valhalla is so soft this week. In fact, I know he probably won't, because it's he can play it, but I think he wants to win and on a firm fast golf course and show that he's got those shots now. I mean, he flat out said it in that interview, and of course he came heartbreakingly close at St. Andrews in LA.
I'm sure he'd be quite happy if it's soft.
He'd be happy if he wins, let's be clear. Yeah. But I mean he would love to win though on a golf course that is supposed to show that he is the more complete player that we know we're seeing, we can visually watch and tell is more complete. He was just feeling it and almost like rubbing it in kind of vibe yesterday.
I, I wonder how much there was of that. I wonder if there's a little bit of that. Do you know, just a couple of comments. I mean, Shoffley is, I mean, he's changed coach. He's actually moved course to get away from his dad. That's really funny.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, isn't it?
And he's moved. I think it's Chris Cuomo, who I've never really liked as a teacher.
He's a good teacher,
I don't know
though.
much, but well, I'm sure he is, obviously. But he hits it far. I mean, he's picked up a lot of ball speed, and yet Rory was doing it by
Oh,
20, 25, 30
unreal.
yards. I mean,
Unreal.
so there is that. Again, and you are right. Some of the clubs that McIlroy was hitting into the with these second shots on that golf course, just preposterous.
Oh.
And Shoffley, Shoffley as well. And just get the roll, get the ball roll back, get the equipment sorted. It's just, because at what, if at this stage in his life, this stage in his career, Xander Shoffley can pick up 3, 4, 5 miles an hour, where does it end?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Sanders, he's
And
not a big guy.
no.
So, anyway,
And
so.
all the side effects. I mean, just watching the practice round here today, watching the walks back to the tees, just such a waste of. And I've tried that argument, as you know, with players and caddies. Like, do you realize how much when you look back at your life, you will have spent a year, a
Yeah.
year
That's
is a
funny.
little strong, but months and months and months of your life, we will. Was spent walking backwards to tees. Is that really, I mean, I literally have tried to explain to guys at Riviera Week, you are spending another half hour every day. That's 2 hours in the week. You could have been doing something else. You could have been watching TV. You could have been working out. You could have been eating. You could have gone out to the pier and looked at the sunset. Like, is really having that ball deal that important to you, and keeping the overlords at a Acushnet happy. I mean, really, good Lord, give me a break. So.
So there was that. The other thing I thought it was really, I don't know if you spotted it. Shoffley eagled the seventh hole, but he took. I actually went back and timed it. I think it was 2 minutes 28 seconds to hit his second shot. I mean, that was absolutely preposterous. That
Yeah.
So the couple of things. One, just on its face, was absolutely outrageous, and secondly, I mean, clearly, I mean, he was doing it all day. I'm sure he was. It was difficult to tell on TV, but it's just slow playing the guy he's playing with. He knows that McIlroy wants to play at a clip, but 2.5 minutes, Jeff, and
Absurd.
nobody says a word to him. It's just
No.
you could hear on the. I said, "Good old Dottie, Dottie." She was saying, "Oh,
Yeah.
well, I can't remember the phrase, but it was a took it, he took it or something. It took a while, but what a great shot!"
I
But
love when
that.
announcers do that. That's so
I
good.
mean, I just thought that was absolutely outrageous,
Yeah.
and every kind of level, and I just thought, I wonder if, of course, I'm sure that, of course, he didn't, but him and his mate, scheming up stuff to yeah. Anyway, you know
I
what I'm
don't know.
talking
He
about.
he's a player who I've watched who he's probably the most infuriating because he can play at a very normal clip and then he also has times where he's very slow. I can't tell you whether he was trying, whether that was gamesmanship or what, but I have seen him at times where you go, well, I don't, he's playing quick almost. And as you know, it's almost easier when somebody's just consistently slow or consistently fast, you just adjust and he's sort of all over the map on that front. And but I, as you say, the idea that that would actually be cracked down on is just it's just gone. And I think that back to his ruling is this problem that they have that and this is where Jay Monahan has totally failed the PGA Tour. And I knew this was coming when I discussed distance and backstopping and all these different things that have cropped up. That when you get to a point where people just assume that nobody's cracking down on you because you're one of the elites or you're on the board or you have a say in a lot of things and the rules officials are scared of you, that's terrible for the tour. You want
Yeah.
people betting on this sport? You want people liking this sport? Give me a break. This is not an action sport. It's not thrilling. So people are golf fans because of different reasons than other sports. And one of those is admiring the integrity, admiring the sportsmanship, sometimes admiring the gamesmanship in a fun way, if it's not obnoxious. And they just seem absolutely oblivious to this idea. And I had this conversation with somebody who's, I don't know what they're doing, but they're interested in everything that's going on, and they're in a significant position. And seeing this person seeing the same exact thing, that you know, you look at what baseball's done, you look at what other sports have done, and they are not paying attention to the things, to these kinds of core things that are directly related to the way the game is played and how people perceive your, and I hate the dreaded word, the product. And so I just don't get it. It's a bizarre thing. And of course, this week, most of the rules officials are part of the PGA Tour rule staff. So, but then you have the weird dynamic with the PGA, and they send out four of their people with the last groups. And yeah, so it's something to keep an eye on as well here.
Yeah. The fact that you're sort of saying that Shoffley is it's varied with him pace of play suggests to me then it's a question of choice on his part. But you know, my final point: if everybody waited for the right wind, my goodness, it'd be 10 well, rounds of golf. You know,
and that is what's happened is that mentality of waiting for your wind is the biggest issue now in slow play, next to walks to tees and all that. And again, that we're here to wait for you to get your wind is it's obnoxious to the fan. It's just obnoxious in general, and it's why windy days now. Again, don't go by Augusta this year. That wind was insane on Friday. Anybody would stop and go, I can't hit. Yeah. The trees are pine trees that are 125 feet tall are bending over. And you're like, well, but this happens with a 15-mile-per-hour or 12-mile-per-hour wind as well.
You mentioned the problems with baseball. I did notice somewhere, I don't know who reported it, sorry, that Theo Epstein, the baseball guru, I guess. I don't know what to call him, Jeff. We talked about him in the podcast.
He's a longtime general manager of the Red Sox, Cubs, and now we're and then briefly with MLB, and now working for the. He finally got the ownership stake that he should have gotten when he finally helped the Red Sox win a championship. And now he's working with the Strategic Sports Group / whatever, PGA Tour Enterprises funders.
Well, I did notice that he is now on full-time. I think he's the full-time ideas guy now. I saw that reported somewhere. So I do get a sense, Jeff. I do get a sense that the grown-ups are decided we've had enough of this nonsense. So that is because of when we spoke about it, the reporting was that Epstein didn't get he wasn't garlanded out of the room after giving his presentation to the assembled PGA Tour player corps. But he's on board, I don't know, not full time, but he certainly is a full time, you know, some kind of advisor on ideas on how to, as you say, we hate the word, improve the product. We'll come on to that, Jeff, very quick. I'm conscious that time is winding on. Just a quick roundup of other things. I think it's Chris Gotter up, won the Myrtle Beach Classic. Oklahoma State came out of Oklahoma. He was a really good, really good amateur. So he's only 24, by the way. He could be a proper, presence. He could be a, physically, he looks like a Brooks Koepka. He looks like a Koepka kind of figure. And
yeah,
he's a big guy. He's won early in his PGA Tour career. So keep an eye on him. The other one, it's a confession time. I mean, I don't know how much you want to fess up, but away from the podcast, I was discussing with somebody whose initials were are GS about how I didn't think Rose Zhang really had the game for the long term on the PGA Tour. She didn't have enough power. She's this, and she's exhausted, and she's trying to get a degree, I wonder if she's actually going to be the real deal. Well, here we are, 10 days later.
I think that's the more extreme version of what I said. I was so struck by, I didn't see a lot of clubhead speed, and I wasn't sure I wasn't as enthralled with her game at Wilshire as I was some other players, but obviously she took it up a notch. Have you ever seen a leaderboard like that where two players
Yeah,
were
so
that
far.
far removed from
Yeah.
everybody? I guess Turnberry, Jack and Watson, I'm not comparing the Founders
Yeah.
Cup to the Open in Turnberry, so just
Yeah.
save your hate mail, by the way. But, you know, Rory and Xander did break away, and then, of course, Rory really broke away. But that was just, that was wild to see that, what they did. And good for her, and good for the LPGA Tour to have her kind of finding it again after kind of a slow start. But she was, there was some school stuff there, right? She still was finishing up her degree, and that's why she didn't play much earlier in the year, right?
Yeah, there was a bit of that. Yeah, I think do you know what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to figure out who finished third at that Open at Turnberry. Can you remember?
It's actually, I don't, but I know, I remember there's a fun trivia story of some kind with it, because I think they were very far removed, and I mean, the greatest, and then Henrik and Phil kind of got away from the field a little bit at Troon last time, but nothing like it. Jack and Watson, obviously, that's the all time.
Anyway, Rosang beats Madeline Sagstrom by 2 shots, 24 under par. Founders Cup, that's great. And you know, maybe, well, obviously, God, I talk some shit about golf sometimes, Jeff. I have to confess, you less so. But I think Rosang might be the real deal after all. I go back and forth on her. But that's a phenomenal performance. Other than that, Jeff. The other PGA Tour news, I've written a couple of notes down here. I did see Scores Golf, the Canadian outfit, reporting. I was really interested. Somebody had talked to RBC. You've spoken about, you know, the PGA Tour, saying if you lose. Yeah, sorry. Well, let me just.
I think it was their media day. She was at a podium with a banner behind her. This wasn't like one little one-off interview. It was the decision maker for RBC, essentially.
And she.
I can hear her name in a moment.
I should have taken more extensive notes, but anyway, the point being, you spoke a couple of weeks ago about how, you know, if the lost Genesis and RBC, the PGA Tour would be in serious bother. Well, we haven't heard from Genesis yet, but the RBC, she sounded ambivalent on the current value for money for their extensive deal, and not entirely committed to extending their sponsorship deal. My goodness, it was. That would, I mean, if nothing else sent shudders through the global home, surely that must have done. It was quite staggering.
It is, but they just don't. I don't understand the vision, but they don't seem to be. And they've always had a weird attitude towards sponsors once they sign a contract. But this is bizarre because, yeah, you had Wells Fargo, of course, saying no mas to Quail Hollow, which has been a great run for them, but they just said there was a certain price that was enough, and they couldn't wait to tell everybody, as we know from our conversation with Josh Carpenter earlier this year. Yep. And then here you, I mean, this just used to never happen, Lawrence. Sponsors openly discussing publicly their concerns like this. Maybe they discussed them with a market or a venue or something, but not with the existential big-term, long-term vision of what golf is and whether we want to be associated with it. This is unbelievable that this is going on and that they are not managing this. I mean, like, what? It's the same topic over and over again that everybody behind the scenes keeps having, and whether it's fans talking to people like me, or fans talking amongst each other, or players talking, what is going, where is the urgency to make sure that you've stopped the bleeding? And it's just not there at all. It's so peculiar.
Well, as I say, that's one to keep an eye on, as is Genesis. He'll be, well, they probably had their Scottish Open day. I'm sure they wouldn't be saying anything at the media day.
No, it's not their style, and they're still a very happy sponsor. But I only mentioned Genesis with RBC because, you know, they have two events, two very, very prestigious events. including one, the Scottish Open, that is apparent to everybody, but the PGA Tour should have been a signature event, should be a priority, should be a kind of a gateway to expanding into some international markets. That's a perfect fit as a setup before the Open, blah, 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 blah. And they keep whiffing at that opportunity. And I think that they just have made very clear there that leaving the shores of the United States is just not the priority of these folks. And again, it may just be simply they've gotten the message from the television networks that that's how they want it. And that's how you, if you want this contract to keep going, that's how it's going to be. I don't know, but it's a strange time.
The go home again. We go on about it all the time. We won't go into it again. Is promoting high schoolers? It's just anyway,
they pinned a tweet on Blaise Brown making the cut. I mean, that is his last name, right?
It is. Yeah.
We have not, the coffee doesn't start till Thursday here, and it's very upsetting right. for some of us. They actually put it at the top of their account. Okay. There aren't many kids on Twitter. Let's start with that. They're on TikTok. So just stop the pandering. And then you have two tournaments going on. You have Rory, and it's creepy. That's all. It's just creepy. And we will be getting a text from one of our valued listeners to set us straight why it's not.
I was set straight by somebody on Twitter last night. I can't remember who. Fair point. Saying that through the years, through the decades, high schoolers, teenagers have made the cut. There's nothing sinister. Not sinister is the wrong word. There's nothing consequential about this. If you go back through the 70s and 80s, random kids came out of nowhere, got on a PGA Tour event and made the cut. But again, I've just forgot to respond. But I think the point being, and that's in the last 3 weeks, we've had Preston Stout did a good performance. He's a freshman at Oklahoma State. Good performance at Kent Corn Ferry Tour. We've had Chris Kim, obviously, made the cut. Miles Russell made the cut. So that's four in a month. That doesn't strike me as being terribly random. And the PGA Tour appears to love it. Again, I think you made the point, and I happen to agree with it. I mean, what are these guys, if Blaise Brown can show up and make the cut at a PGA Tour event, what about these guys who've been around for a while? And what are they doing? Having said that, Jeff, and having walked, Niall played a practice round with Blaise Brown a couple of years ago, and I think he's about 18 months or a year younger than Niall, and my goodness, that kid is impressive. And, he might be the real deal.
We're not picking on, it's not the kids, we're picking on the obsession with projecting youth and look, we're young, and it just, as we know, it just gets exhausting in the sport. I thought we were, you'd think with the game having grown, it has grown, okay, it, the growth has happened, why this desperation to still need, and by the way, the biggest growth has been in junior golf, kids are playing. It's just, and we know it's marketing driven, and that's what makes it so uncomfortable. It has nothing to do with really anything beyond that, and trying to get demo numbers certain way. It's so that's what makes it weird. But it is funny that 16-year-olds are making these cuts so easily. What does it say about the vaunted depth of the PGA Tour that we hear about all the time?
Anyway, I just want to put that marker down, so when Blaise Brown wins in the PGA Tour in 2 years' time, from what I saw and from what I've been told, he is the real deal. He is, of all of these younger guys, he has got as much as any of them, at least. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if these kids go to college or not. That'll be the next decision they've all got to make. Listen, finally, I don't know. I'm so confused and lost with this, story, these committee stories. And I think we correctly identified the problem. Well, we were certainly, we identified it pretty early on, certainly earlier than anybody else, that there might be an issue with Rory getting back on with the Webb Simpson baton pass Tarori and is a member of the PGA Tour Enterprises board and the policy board. Anyway, lo and behold, that's what happened. Rory revealed it was after we did a podcast, inconveniently, that indeed there was a blockage he's put up to his membership of those two outfits, organizations, boards, whatever you want to call them, and subsequently reported again. We mentioned this, that it would have been Tiger, Cantley, obviously, and Spieth were the ones who put the kibosh on it, albeit behind the pretense, let's put it a bit better than that, all behind the explanation that, I think it was you that mentioned this, that it didn't seem like it was in line with good corporate practice. The guys can pass board positions around to each other. Camp Cantley, Camp Tiger, whoever, they used that to block Rory. Goodness knows why, but there you are. Well, I guess we can all guess why. But subsequent to that mess, Rory was then revealed.
Lawrence. Let's be clear. Rory is on the transaction subcommittee. He doesn't have voting rights, but he is on the tracks. I was saying to a group of former tour players today, is there anything that gives away an organization in shambles more than where they just start creating more committees? It's like a country club that just creates, the locker room committee and the this committee and the that committee. And now they got the subcommittees, and then they'll have task forces within the subcommittees. It is incredible. Well, so yes, just to be clear, he's on the transaction subcommittee, as is Adam Scott. We don't know when that started, but it seems like Sunday there was a Zoom call last Sunday, according to Rory. But he does not have voting rights on the committee.
Well, it's funny you should say there was a Zoom, again, a very, very small matter, but it just tickled me that there was apparently a Zoom meeting last Sunday. Well, there was no, it was subsequently, on the Wednesday, it was the existence of this transaction subcommittee was revealed on the Wednesday, and there was only one, I think it was Doug Ferguson reported that there was only one player on that committee. It was Tiger Woods. But lo and behold, a couple of days later, it was revealed that a few more players were on this committee. So, I mean, the gang that can't shoot straight, they can't get the story straight. Here's, again, in my many years as obviously running, multinational corporations, Jeff, I think this is what my experience would tell me is happening here, is that, as I said earlier in the podcast, that I think the grown-ups have decided we've had enough of this nonsense. And by grown-ups, I mean the Sports Strategic Group, the Fenway Sports Group. I'm guessing that... That the transaction subcommittee. Well, Rory's he has no voting rights, but he's the ambassador to Yasser, clearly. So he will be performing that role. And I think this all negotiations on this proposed deal between the PIF and the PGA Tour will all be done through this transaction subcommittee, and whatever they come up with, that proposal will then be used to basically force it through. The problem that the Camp McElroy will face is that they have to get it through the full board.
Yeah,
but if you formulate a deal and get a deal structure together with the transaction subcommittee, then you can basically just push. I mean, the pressure on the full board would be quite significant. Because they don't want to be seen as the people who are stopping this, promised land, stopping this arrival in the promised land. So I'm guessing that's the way it goes. That makes kind of sense, doesn't it?
I suppose. Here's what's going to happen. This is what somebody told me today, who we both think is very smart and follows all this just enough to not lose his mind. The Strategic Sports Group has gotten their introduction to Yasser, which is what they've always wanted more than anything. Eventually, the Public Investment Fund will be able to invest in their franchises. They already could in the NBA, but in other sports, it's not quite there yet, but it will be. And the DP World Tour and LIV will become an entity, and they will control professional golf outside of the United States, and the PGA Tour will be a U.S.-based organization that has a good, solid contract for years to come, six more years. And this will be the solution. We will have a splintered world. I don't know what will happen with the world ranking. I didn't go that far with the person, but that will be the outcome. And whether players can play both, I don't know. But so this idea of getting people getting their hopes up for a deal is just, it's absurd, one, because it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. The way they, like some sort of dream, everybody comes back together, merger kind of thing. And number two, there is no guarantee that even if they make a deal and they all get back together and it's kumbaya, that the fan will come back. You know, there's parts of the population that just will not want anything to do with the public investment fund of Saudi Arabia. There are people who are playing a lot of golf and they've gotten bored with all this. And there are people who just find professional golf not worth spending much time on except four times a year. So this idea now, this current thing of dreaming for a deal is, I think, I think you better hope for something else in life, because whatever happens, I don't think it's going to deliver what people hope.
Well, I mean, I guess,
and that's partly my opinion and partly the person who's much more in tune with the dialogue on the inside than I am.
I guess we can all game how we think it'll play out from my perspective. Listening to that, Fenway, I keep on calling Fenway Sports Group, it's more than that, but the strategic sports group will not allow any outcome in which the game is splintered. You know, they didn't invest
really?
$1.5 billion. Oh, of course not. They didn't invest $1.5 billion straight up with a promise of another $1.5 billion to own the, you know, a chunk of the PGA Tour. As it currently exists, and that scenario that you're laying out leaves the PGA Tour. In fact, it contracts the PGA Tour from what it currently exists as. So I can't see that happening. But again, you can game this out multiple ways.
Let me respond to that. Well, what if their scenario is, look, we see this as something that could be very successful using parts of the old model, updating some things, staying with its current contract on television, making sure they shore up some things with sponsors. And we've done our part, and we got the introduction we wanted to a man who has control of $1 trillion. Their goals may not be as lofty as you think. They may be more modest, and
Jeff,
that may not be a bad thing. I mean, that might be the best outcome they can muster with this.
Jeff, they didn't spend $1.5 billion for an introduction to Yasser. They just didn't. You know, they could
get. It's not that much money. And by the way they layered it, it doesn't. Have they even committed that much money? Have you watched some of the or listened to some of the explanations of this thing they crafted that Adam Scott called the most complex deal in the history of? Exaggerating.
Well,
I love Adam. He's a great, great man, but.
Well, we know they've already committed hundreds of millions of dollars in this equity disposal plan. So they have, even at that, let's call it 500 million. They didn't pay 500 million for an introduction to Yas. They just didn't. And again, we can all game it out in our own different ways. But what I can agree with, Jeff, regardless of how it happens or how it works out, are the normal fans, are they going to come back? Again, I was to your point earlier in the podcast. I was out, I'm a play down at the local nine holer, very, very active, and we had a great winter league, a bunch of guys there, the Mill Valley Winter League. Shout out to Adam Leong for his winning team. My God, I wish he'd stop going on about it. But the point, you ask around, Jeff, and all these guys have got into golf post COVID, love it, can't play enough golf. Nobody watches the PGA Tour. The only interest they have in the PGA Tour is fantasy league. That's it. You know who won this week, and they're not watching it to find out who won. They just kind of find out on a Sunday evening, and I just wonder how they're going to get that. Certainly not with the product as currently conceived. That's not, even if you do tweak it here and there, that's not bringing these people back. I don't think.
No, and what's interesting about that is that the tour has always taken the core fan for granted. Their vision has always been, how do we bring in new fans, bring in more women, bring in more young people? And they took that core fan for granted in the one sport where the fan plays the sport, where that maintaining that connection was so vital. And to think that they've lost that is really amazing. Knowing what we know about golf people and how even when you're just slightly, maybe you're tired of the game or you have an injury and you can't play, or financially you just don't, you can't put the time and money in, but you keep that connection. And we have more people with a looser connection to the sport than at any point in our lifetimes, thanks to Top Golf, thanks to the legitimization of just being a range golfer or just being a Top Golf person or whatever. There's just more people loosely connected who consider themselves a golfer. And it's one of the great things that's happened, that we broke down that barrier that you have to have a handicap and be a member of a club and play on Saturday mornings. You can be a lot of different things. You can wear a t-shirt, all that different stuff. They have that. They've gotten it, and they've lost those people. I mean, what is that? That is an amazing thing to think about. And they don't seem to be making any – they're still consumed with getting new young people or women or this or that. It's like, just stop. Oh, anyway, they're all over the map on what they're trying to bring in. And they've lost the thing that should be most addicted. And it's not all their fault. I mean, having the Golf Channel whittled down to nothing hasn't helped. You know, that was a kind of a nerve center for the, at least in the U.S., for the game. So there are some factors that have hurt, but it's mostly self-inflicted.
Yeah, quite right. Quite a feat to alienate your loyal fan base in such a short space of time. But they've, well, it's not, but it's been over a period of years. Well, here we are. I think it's finally happening. What was threatening to happen is finally happening at this stage. Anyway, we'll see. Rory's back on the transaction subcommittee or whatever it's called. As I say, he's the ambassador to Yasser. Good luck to him. Actually, there's some good people, and you know, Rory's obviously great. Adam Scott's, you know, he's on that as well. Joe Ogilvie's another one. You would put a bit of faith in Joe Ogilvie maybe getting something done. We'll see. Anyway, Jeff, I guess I should let you go. What you got on for the rest of the day at Valhalla? Are you going home now, or is it?
I've got a newsletter to put together. I've got, you know, and then of course I got to do the all important merchandise roundup. There was actually good merchandise here. I know you're dying to know what was the standout, and yeah, can't well, wait. We have a ton of press conferences tomorrow. I don't know why, but they piled them all into one day, and maybe the forecast had something to do with it. So we'll get to hear players opine. I don't have high hopes for anything too thrilling, but you never know.
Well, okay, we'll look forward to it. That's the Quadrilateral, Jeff's newsletter. If you haven't yet subscribed, make sure you get there. It's on Substack. I am going off tomorrow, certainly for the morning, Jeff, to the Stanford Regional, NC2 Regionals this week. So I'll go down and see a bit of that. Quite good teams there. Stanford, obviously, Illinois. Runners-up in this year's Big Ten Golf Championship, Jeff. Lost to Northwestern, believe it or not. So there you go, yeah. Anyway, that should be a good day of college golf. Can't wait to see that. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a great week in Valhalla, mate.
Thanks, Lawrence. Then I realize it's wide open.
side of the throne. It's wide open love. It's a wide open road. It's a wide open road.